Nothing nefarious, just trying to figure out what we think is the best thing to help you make the best understanding.
No, nothing nefarious here. And definitely nothing nefarious when Lloyd Larson is involved. It never ends with these people. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of the program. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone, one of the only ones bringing you the truth of what's happening in our state's capital. Broadcasting to you from the depths of the middle swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday. I couldn't make any of this stuff up, even if I tried. There has been so much going on the program this week, and we're only at Wednesday. Since last week, I have been bringing you breaking story after breaking story, and all of them are big. And wouldn't you know, there's yet another one for this morning's program, and I'm going to tell you all about it. On today's show, I've got an excellent interview with Representative Mark Jennings from House District 30. He covers a lot of the big things that have been happening in the House of Representatives. House Bill 203 that went down in flames, House Bill 45 that's not really going to help you with your property taxes, and definitely the most important part of our discussion is Mark talks about the death of Officer Krenke and his vote on that budget amendment. So that's coming later on in the broadcast. But first, as if you haven't had enough breaking news yet, I've got yet another story to add into everything that's been happening this week. It started with the Redcoats, the Wyoming caucus, breaking the law by using Clark Stith's office, allowing lobbyists to go in and out as they please, and using the Wyoming Capitol as their base of operations for their political and campaign activity. Using Clark Stith's office to send out emails trashing the Freedom Caucus. Lobbyists, who, by the way, are prohibited by Wyoming law from doing everything that they were doing in Stith's office. And then there was Joanne True trying to use the power of the police to intimidate a journalist, namely me. One more time, just because I can't resist and it's my program, doesn't look like I'm very intimidated, does it, Joanne? You are welcome on this program anytime you like. I would gladly give you an hour to sit down with me and try to justify everything that you have done against Wyoming citizens. That's absolutely right. It's what I said. Against Wyoming citizens. Joanne True, Rebecca Fitzgerald, the Wyoming Caucus, R5 Strategies, Wyoming Free. That's the one that's run by Shelley Duncan and Dan Zwanitzer, whose executive director is Rebecca Fitzgerald. All of that using the People's House for political gain. It's absolutely wrong, and it's absolutely against Wyoming law. The question is, will anyone do anything about it? A little birdie told me there might be a complaint showing up in the Secretary of State's office and the Legislative Service office today. I wonder if anybody will mention it. Stay tuned, my friends. Stay tuned. But wait, there's more. If you thought the fun and games was over after all of those breaking stories, you'd be sadly mistaken. It appears that the House Appropriations Committee attempted to hide critical financial data about the state of Wyoming and about the budget that they had just passed from all of the members of the House of Representatives. Much like the coyote, always trying to catch the roadrunner, meep, meep. The Wyoming Caucus and House Appropriations have been caught yet again trying to conceal what they've been doing from your elected representative. The bottom line is they tried to hide the very large number of dollars that the House of Representatives spent. That number is $1.129 billion. The reason why that's significant is that's the dollar difference between what the House passed and what the Senate passed. The House of Representatives passed $1.129 billion more than the Wyoming Senate. Here's how it all went down. The Senate Appropriations Committee and the House Appropriations Committee sat down with the Legislative Service Office and tried to come up with basically a summary document to show everybody in their respective chambers as to where the budget sat. What were the differences between the House and the Senate? Now, the Senate's version of it showed all of the big numbers, the $1.129 billion difference between the House and the Senate. And, I'm reading from it right now, the increase of general appropriations over the Joint Appropriations Committee, the differences between the House and the Senate, and as you can imagine, the dollar differences are all bigger with the House of Representatives. So the House version of this document omitted that whole part. They didn't want all of the elected representatives in the House to know exactly where we stood financially. They didn't want them to see how many amendments had passed and what the big difference was between the House and the Senate. In other words, the House Appropriations Committee, which is Bob Nicholas, Lloyd Larson, Tom Walters, Trey Sherwood, Bill Henderson, Clark Stith, and Dave Zwanitzer, tried to conceal all of that information from the House of Representatives. Copies of both of those documents are available at cowboystatepolitics.com, and you can clearly see the difference between the two. Both of the documents were printed within a minute of each other, so it's clear that the Legislative Service Office put the whole package together, one for the House and one for the Senate. Everything was going to plan until Representative Scott Heiner foiled their plot. He just walked down the hall, got a copy from the Senate, made copies for all his colleagues in the House, and then put them on their desk. It was then that Representative Lloyd Larson tried to explain away their deception. Here's what he said. And remember, there's nothing nefarious going on here.
That we just reviewed. They also provided us with the major difference sheet. And this was an LSO document to that they come up with to help us. It had more on it, and there's a version that the Senate has that has more on it. It's just an LSO staff. So at the end of the conversation, our good chairman says, okay, so what do we want to provide for the body so that they can review and understand? Similarly to what I'm doing right now, probably taking more time than you wish that I would in explaining things, and I'm accused of that often.
Let me try to summarize what he's saying. See, what we were doing, it's all in your best interest, so you should just trust us. Yeah, bull crap. Here's the rest of it.
And then other times, well, you just didn't give us enough information, trying to thread that needle on what do we provide and what don't we provide. Our good chairman asked this committee, what do we want to provide to the House members? We liked the major difference, the lower part of it. The top part of it, which explained how many mirror amendments, how many related, unrelated, and the differences of $1.1 billion. I think we all have heard via the news and everybody else there's $1.1 million. We thought, and it was frankly my recommendation to the chairman, that this is the document that we provide, thinking that it would provide clear instruction. And then we also thought this summary sheet, which we don't have to provide, would also help provide clearer and certainly was much better than just this one page. So I think sometimes you wonder, well, why did they not provide more, or why did they provide so much? Nothing nefarious, just trying to figure out what we think is the best thing to help you make the best understanding.
So in other words, we just didn't want to confuse you, you know. We're only giving you the information that you need to know. Right. The truth is, they don't want everybody in the House of Representatives to know what they've been up to, and they certainly don't want you to know about it. And don't think that it's just the Appropriations Committee. Bob Nicholas, Lloyd Larson, and Clark Stith, all of whom are on the House Appropriations Committee, are deeply involved in the Wyoming caucus. And don't forget the Wyoming caucus's number two, Barry Crago. He's absolutely involved in this. He told Sheridan Media this.
The House, on our end, we actually increased general fund expenditures by $147 million. The difference there isn't as large as you would think. But of the $147 million increase in general fund expenditure on our end, a lot of that is actually coming home to us in Johnson County and Sheridan County.
Allow me to translate for Poisonberry Crago. Well, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. And really, you know, general funds, we only spent $147 million. I don't think that Wyoming citizens really care which coffee can it comes out of. We care about what the total dollar amount that you're taking from us is. That number is $1.129 billion. It also happens to be the same number that Barry and his pals attempted to hide from the rest of the House. Again, both of those documents are available at cowboystatepolitics.com. Look at them both. You can clearly see where the House Appropriations Committee was trying to hide all of those numbers from the rest of the House of Representatives. And don't forget for a minute that the Wyoming caucus was absolutely right in the middle of all of this. Now, I don't have the big giant scanner that's at the Cowboy State Politics studio. I've just got my travel scanner with me. So I've had to piece together the two pieces of each document, but when you go to the website, you'll see clearly what I'm talking about. Enough of that business. Let's get to the interview with Representative Mark Jennings from House District 30 in Sheridan County.
Mark, been a while.
It has been a while. Too long. Glad to be here.
Well, we're down here in Cheyenne, and we've got, what, a week and a half of the legislature to go?
Yep, that's about right, about a week and a half.
Okay, now there's been quite a stir over House Bill 203. Now, House Bill 203, that was Steve Harshman's, let's switch our whole tax structure over to sales tax, right? Could you tell me about that bill?
Yeah, the philosophy behind it was that he was going to have us raise the sales tax by two percent, and then do away with the property tax. But it had other problems with it that were clearly could have bitten us way harder. And most people thought that we were looking for tax relief, and this bill leaves it open-ended to where it actually would be broadening the tax base.
Well, I know a lot of people that I've talked to that have, you know, sent me messages on email and Facebook have said, well, this will give us like immediate relief on our property taxes. We won't have to pay property taxes anymore, and we're just going to pay, you know, this 2% sales tax. So is that really how the bill was going to work?
Well, that was how it was kind of purported to work, but it left a number of things that were kind of open-ended that got put in, a number of things got pulled out. It was all over the place as to the danger that bill could have brought about. Could it have brought relief? In the short term, probably could have brought some. But it was very dangerous, I personally believe, as the potential for harm coming out of that was
okay, well,
very
talk
high.
Talk to me about some of the problems with it.
Well, it had an exemption of, I believe it was $200,000 for the first year, and then it went up to $1 million in the second year. And so 90% of the people wouldn't be paying any taxes. But the problem with the exemption is that clearly, if they came back to the legislature 3 years from now and said, hey, this isn't raising enough money, the 2% sales tax, then the exemption could lower. It could have gone from $1 million right back down to $200,000 or $100,000. And so you're right back where you were with property tax again, because it didn't eliminate property tax. It only gave exemption for people under $200,000 or $1 million after a second year. The 2% could raise. You could easily come along and we average around 5, and so it would go to 7%. But that also was not locked in. And take things like construction costs on all the things that we do in Wyoming. And that's a compounding of those that tax, because now you're paying tax, sales tax on stuff, and now you're going to have to go, say, your school's construction and stuff like that's going to go up by 2%, and it's already going up with inflation and stuff. So it creates that. It was only on the dwelling. So theoretically, you could. It's one of the problems that came out in House Bill 45 also. It's the postage stamp or just the footprint of just the dwelling, and it was not the land or the improvements around. And that was problematic for me also from the standpoint that, again, those could rise even if you had the exemption on the dwelling. The rest of it could easily be continue to rise. But probably the biggest problem for me that I seen fairly early on was that in Mr. Harshman's speech on the floor, and I've been in Revenue Committee for several years with him, one of the ways that you broaden that tax base is you go out into other areas, and he said it on the floor, Wyoming taxes about 50 services. While South Dakota doesn't have an income tax, but they tax approximately 155 or 160. And Texas, they tax almost 200, 195 services or something like that.
So before you go on, I don't mean to interrupt you, but yeah. give me a couple examples of these services that we're talking about.
Mowing your yard. So you hire someone to mow your yard right now, that's not taxable. Your haircuts, it could reach into any of the services,
okay.
Anywhere. Handyman coming and doing a little bit of work on your replacing windows. It would reach into all kinds. They've talked about it for legal services. They've talked about it for tax services. All kinds of services.
Now, he mentioned that more than once on the floor. Yeah. In fact, he kept going back to it. Another thing that really caught me, and when he was giving his speeches, is he kept mentioning Tax Reform 2000. Now, the whole point of that, one of the big points of that, was to create a state income tax. Now, I mean, that was just a part of it, but the whole point was to figure out how can we tax Wyoming citizens more. And so with House Bill 203, I kept pointing out to people that, you know, there's a segment of our state that they don't own property. They're the folks that rent their home or their apartment, and so they don't pay property taxes anyway. So for those folks, this is a tax increase.
Yeah, it is, and it's in some regards, you can look at sales tax and say it's more fair because you're being taxed on what you choose to buy. But when you look at the poorer people in our society, this tax is actually a little more. It's a regressive tax.
I think it's the most regressive tax you can.
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm not a fan in any way of sales taxes. So let's talk about a bill that did pass. Well, first, I guess you voted against 203, right?
I did vote against 203.
And that one failed today.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about a bill that did pass, House Bill 45. There's been a lot of talk about this. I know the members of House and Senate leadership leading up to the session, they thought this was the most conservative tax reform bill that they had come up with. What was that one about?
Well, I voted no on that one also, but for slightly different reasons, but some of them were the same. It was also only given relief to the dwelling. And so the land, the outbuildings, all of that could have continued to go up and probably would continue to go up. And then another thing that it did was it locked in the last 4 years. We've seen year over year property taxes going up. Some counties 30, 40, 50% year over year. And this 45 would have locked in, or will, because it did pass the House, lock in those historic high property tax values. We tried to run amendments to do a rollback to 19 when they wouldn't accept that. We rolled it back to 21. They wouldn't accept that. listen, this one doesn't give tax relief. It locks in historic high 4 or 5 years of historically year over year higher taxes. And this that 45 bill locks that into place. It has a 5% cap, which really is a cap on the increase, and it's really almost a one-year cap because of the way that's set up. The structure to it creates problems further years down. But think about 5%. In 5% or at 5%, that doubles in every 14 years. So whatever you're locked into at historically high numbers in 14 years, if taxes continue to go up, and not much reason to think that they're going to go down much, it doubles in 14 years. So, and then again, the largest reason that I voted no on it is I believe it's unconstitutional because the spirit
okay,
of...
Okay, so explain that.
Okay. The unconstitutional
right.
part is, for me, as I look at that, the spirit of the Constitution is to create... fairness in this, that it's equal inside of a class. And we see that in the spirit of it from you're not to go more than 4 points from, say, industrial at 11.5 or and residential is 9.5. And you can't drop more than 4 points in between any two classes. Agriculture is kind of in its own wheelhouse there, but so the spirit of the Constitution in that is to not create, it's to create uniformity between classes, and certainly within a class, uniformity is very important or should be to us. In this case, it's by making it only on the dwelling and only for, you know, people that own their own homes, you're actually creating non-uniformity inside a class, inside the residential class. And so for me, I view that as, I would think that it would, there'd be a very good chance that if a lawsuit came, it would be struck down as unconstitutional.
I think there's another way that it's unconstitutional,
okay.
Mark. Because the way that Barry Crago has been pushing this, well, it's not just Barry, it's his bill, but it's all the people on the other side. They're saying that the legislature can create exemptions in the tax code, and they can do that any way that they want. Well, really, that's an attempt to do an end run around the
yeah.
constitutional prohibitions that are in our Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean,
I believe that's correct also. In fact, I've heard people in DOR say that is that, and it hasn't been challenged. But it would be interesting to see if it were to get challenged, would the exemptions hold up? Because it's almost a special law, right? Because one group of people, it's picking winners and losers who's going to get an exemption, therefore a lesser of a tax bill, and who's going to get more.
Well, and that's another thing that I had forgotten about until right now, but in the language of the bill, doesn't it leave the discretion up to the county assessor who gets the exemption and who doesn't?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it reminds me that I think there is definitely some wording to that effect.
Or maybe I got that from the training that the Department of Revenue put on for county assessors or the Assessor Association.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the budget session, and you guys you've pretty much approved a budget, and it's $1.129 billion more than what the Senate approved.
I think it's 1.9. It's 1.129.
I know it's it's more than $1 billion.
Yes, it is. That's correct.
How did you get to that point?
Well, our appropriations team and the people who like to tax and spend outvoted us. There are about 25 conservatives that believe that we have a spending problem, and therefore that's what drives our taxation problem. And They were bent on making sure that we spent way beyond our budget. There was already an $800 million above last year's budget already built in. And so, you know, they went another 300 and some odd million above that. And so between the Senate and the House, the difference is, like you said, 1.1 and some change.
Whatever
above.
It is.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous is what it is.
We'll get back to my discussion with Representative Mark Jennings in just a second. But first, an absolutely outrageous profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or a roping arena, or maybe you need a big giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't matter what type of building you've been thinking about for your property, give Nick and Jesse a call. One more time, their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. Gunrunner Auctions is one of the nation's leading online firearms auction houses. They're located right here in Wyoming over in Cody. It doesn't matter what type of firearm you've been looking for, whether it's a Winchester or a Colt or rare military weapons, Gunrunner Auctions probably has them. And it's not just guns. They have a wide selection of firearm ammunition and accessories. So it doesn't matter what type of firearm thing you're looking for, your first stop should be Gunrunner Auctions. They've sold the personal collections of Elvis Presley, Steve McQueen, and Alex McCord, just to name a few. All of their auctions start at $20, and there's absolutely no reserve. So if you're looking for a gun, or if you don't even know that you're looking for a gun, go to their website, thegunrunner.com. The following advertisement was paid for by Reed Raisner for Senate. Who's the leader for the Senate? It's Reed Raisner. He's the one for you and me. Cheer his name so happily. R-A-S-N-E-R. What's his name? Reed Raisner. R-A-S-N-E-R. What's his name? Reed Raisner. Reed Raisner for the Senate. With the voice so strong and true. Bringing change term limits to Reed Raisner's here for you. And now, back to the program. What were some of the crazier amendments? I mean, in every budget, you've got pork barrel spending, this one in particular, but there's always some amendments that are absolutely nuts stuffed into the budget. What were some of those that you guys tried to defeat, or that you did defeat?
We did. We did defeat one, and that was they wanted to spend $700,000 on a Rose Bowl parade float from Wyoming.
A float.
And that was the only one that actually the conservatives got killed.
That's amazing. Out of all of that money, I mean, $1 billion, it's hard to put into perspective. And this is a phenomenon that I didn't realize until I started coming down here to the legislature. You know, when you don't pay any attention to politics, you think, wow, you know, $5,000, that's a lot of money. And it still is a lot of money for us. But when you start looking at big numbers like $1 million, or $10 million, or $100 million, pretty soon, those smaller amounts, smaller being $700,000, it kind of appears to be sort of insignificant, which is what the other side tends to, I mean, that's how they look at it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, another one is we have a 250-year celebration coming up, and I'm very patriotic, and I want to see us celebrate that, but I think that amendment was $2.5 million, and for something like along the lines of fireworks. And
no, Sandy Newsom says that she doesn't blow up money, Mark.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I would want to see us celebrate that, but it ought to be from the patriots of this state, and they make those decisions that they want to celebrate that. It's not the role of government to take other people's money and then put it into something like that.
Yeah, I have no problem if, you know, the city of Sheridan wants to throw a, you know, 250-year anniversary for the Declaration of Independence. If your community wants to do that, I'm okay with it. But the government ought not to be taking your money to throw a party.
Well, the city has to take your money to throw that party, too. So,
but my point is that, I mean, it's closer to the people.
Yeah, and they could be involved somewhere there.
Sure.
Send a fire truck out in case things get out of hand. But.
So tell me about the process. What happens now? The budget's been approved. So what should we be looking for next?
Well, 22 people voted no on it. That's the highest number in my 10 years that have ever voted no on a budget. So the House has passed a budget that is almost $1.2 billion above where the Senate's position is. So now they'll begin having conference committees, 5 people from the Senate and 5 people from the House, and they'll see if they can iron out that difference of almost $1.2 billion. That's a rather tall order. I've never seen it like this in my 10 years. I've seen 300, 400, 500 million, but I've never seen a billion or a billion plus. That's going to be a hard one to reconcile. So if they can get that reconciled in the next week and a half, then normally we would sign off on it, or at least there'd be people enough that would vote for it. I'm not going to vote for it because it's just got far too much fat in it.
You voted against the budget in the House, right?
I did vote against the budget in the House, and they would have to come far closer to the Senate's position for me to want to vote for it. I've only voted for one budget in the whole time I've been there, and it was because they cut $430 million, and they still were growing government. They didn't make structural changes.
Recently, Sheridan County lost one of our police officers, and it was a tragic situation all the way around. And I don't believe you've really had an opportunity to talk to your district about that. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to just talk to Officer Krinke's family and the people of Sheridan. Just tell us what's on your mind about it, and then we'll talk about the resolution that went through the House.
Well, anytime you have a tragedy like that, I mean, it's heart-wrenching. I mean, it's senseless murder of a officer in the line of duty. And so it's just tragedy. I mean, I don't know what other words you can use there. And it a lot of harm and hurt for the community. And so my heart goes out to the family. We're praying for them. It's hard to process that somebody would be willing to do that to a law enforcement officer like that, but over an eviction notice of all things. Yeah. That's just so senseless. That having been said, our hopes and prayers, I know our church has already, before I'd even gone home on the weekend, had already was doing some reaching out and trying to minister and, you know, have some giving and stuff for the widow and the kids. And
yeah, he had a brand new baby.
Yeah, he's got another one. I understood. Someone told me that he has another one on the way.
Oh, man.
And so I was very glad to see that, and that's right. Community ought to reach out, and they ought to be the ones that wrap their arms around this family, and hopefully, I think they are. Everything that I hear, I mean, we're 300 miles away, but I think we should. as a community.
You'll be going back to Sheridan for the funeral, right?
Yes, it's on Friday, and we intend to be there.
Okay, so let's talk about the resolution that went through the House.
It was a budget amendment.
A budget amendment, excuse me.
That's right.
So first, I guess the first question is, what was the budget amendment? And then second, how did you vote on it?
Well, the original was an amendment to give $450,000 or somewhere in that neighborhood, and 100% of the fallen officer's salary in perpetuity. And I voted no on both of those because I think there's good reason. I think you have to be very cautious with it. One, it's special law, and our Constitution talks very clearly about you cannot pass a special law for a very small group of people. And they put that in there with cause. There is a provision inside the pension that the widow will receive 62% of his salary, and I believe that is in perpetuity. But in this amendment, there was no provision for, you know, if she remarries or, you know, nothing about saying for how long. And the problem, one of the problems that I had with it is that when you, that fund is about 84% funded, but you're reaching in, and one of the biggest things in states is, you know, a lot of our pensions are set up at the state level to not even be designed to give a COLA. It's a very good pension, but it's to try and keep it actuarially sound. And what's gotten so many states in trouble is that they reach back in there and they try and keep up with everything that comes along. Well, this is a basic pension and a good one. And when you reach in and do that, then where do you stop? I mean, there's been highway workers that have been killed in the line of duty. Are we going to do that same thing for them? We haven't. I mean, there's something set in place, but to move it to 100%, which was eventually amended down to 90%, you're putting others. I mean, I don't know where you stop in that. I mean, a teacher has
a car wreck.
Yeah, I mean, it's just public employee pensions, and you can't reach in. In my opinion, you can't reach in and hand out taxpayer dollars on top of that. And even inside the pension, although the legislature can do some things like that, I think it's a very dangerous precedent to fall down that head down that road, because I really don't know where you would stop.
Well, I don't think it's a proper role of government.
Yeah, you're taking from other people if you're giving from general fund dollars, and it's truly not ours to give in that way. Davy Crockett makes a very good case where he was kind of caught doing that same thing, and he voted that way to actually give money to a widow. And I have his book and some of his talk on that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Where he talked with the guy that he was trying to see if he would vote for him again, and the farmer gave him some really good quotes that I have a hard time getting around. The farmer said, "Well, Colonel, where do you find in the Constitution any authority to give away the public money in charity?" And I always think about that. In this case, there was both. There was, an ask that I believe was general fund dollars, and that was defeated. And Crockett said back to him, "Well, my friend, I may as well own up. You got me there, but certainly nobody will complain that a great and rich country like ours should give the insignificant sum of $20,000 to relieve its suffering women and children. And particularly with a full and overflowing treasury, and I'm sure if you'd been there, you would have done just as I did. Well, in Wyoming, that's very accurate. We have a full treasury. But the farmer gave a very cutting and honest answer. It is not the amount, Colonel, that I complain of. It is the principle. In the first place, the government ought to have in its treasury no more than enough for its legitimate purposes. But that has nothing to do with the question. The power of collecting and dispersing money at pleasure is the most dangerous power that can be entrusted to man, particularly under our system of collecting revenue by a tariff, which reaches every man in the country, no matter how poor he may be. And the poorer he is, the more he pays in proportion to his means. And so I, when I voted no, I'm looking at it from that standpoint, that's a very slippery slope for government to get involved in. There are lots of places where we do that, where I feel like that we're out of line now. It's one of the reasons that I'm opposed to so much of the basket of goods, as they call it, is that it's not the proper role of government. The proper role here is for the people in the community. I don't know, but I can't imagine that there wasn't a life insurance policy. Tragically hits a family or something like that, and in the public sector for sure. I would hope that we would have that, and obviously there was a pension, and obviously it's set up for some of that purpose, but for the legislature to reach in there and redistribute that money, I'm just very resonant to do that.
Well, I mean, this is a hard case. I mean, because it is a tragedy. It is a family that's going to have to live without their dad. I mean, there is no question about it that this is a terrible, terrible tragedy. But charity is not the role of government. I mean, charity is the role of churches and the community. And in this case, and I don't mean to speak for you, Mark, but there's a lot of people in Sheridan that have put their arms around this family. I know of at least one bank account that's already set up to where people want to donate to it. And I think you mentioned another really good point, that this is making a law for one person.
Yeah, that was another problem that I had with it, was that it was very specific. It was only for the widow of a law enforcement officer that was killed between, I think it said something like January and February of 2024. And we're forbidden by the Constitution. And even the way that it's done here in this budget amendment, even taking that up to 90%, the budget amendment is only good for 2 years, only while that budget lasts. And so in 2 years, this family will find that it goes back to the 62%, or else, you know, the legislature will have had to reach in and do it again. And it's just not how the government should be doing business. And again, I strongly recommend that people reach out and help. I mean, this was a tragedy.
Well, I know our church, and if anybody asks, and not just this family, but you know, if anybody needs help, we're the kind of people that we would be, you know, the first to say, absolutely, what do you need? Yeah. We'll help as much as we can. And like I said, that situation hasn't happened yet with this family, but I know that there are members of our church that have already reached out.
I think there are some financial aid that's also been going there too, but I know there is in other areas for sure.
Well, Mark, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you had a long day today. Is there anything else you want to talk about before I let you go?
I do, David. I have one other thing related to our first two subject matters, and that is amendments that I ran on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I did an episode about these, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, I ran, it's not totally my idea. There was some very good, intelligent people that have been working on property tax relief and actual reform. And so I took part of their work and I ran a budget amendment that took the first one that I ran was $80 million. And it reached into the general fund because we had enough to cover that. Because the reason I chose that number was it was 1/10 of the excess, the 30% above last year's budget.
The 30% above property taxes that they stole from us is what you mean.
Last year in the property tax division of that, it was about $504 million, just above what was the year before. And so in this year, they had an $800 million. So I thought, I'll reach in and I'll grab 10% and try and help our constituents out with immediate relief until we can actually get to legitimate reform. Because in my opinion, I'm also the author of Acquisition, which, as you know, that would be actual reform.
I think that's the solution.
Yeah, that's the long term, but that would take several years. And I only ran this for 1 year. So that we could revisit again in the next year. So I took that 800 number, 800 million number, and I took 1/10 of it. And I reached in to grab that out of general fund. And what we would have done was that would have bought 7 mills on everybody in Wyoming's property tax bill. So the reason that I did that was because we always hear, one, oh, you can't do things like this because it's unconstitutional. It's why the other side has reached in and started using the word exemption. And in this case, it was to not give an exemption, but to actually buy down their property tax debt by 7 mills. And that keeps the schools completely whole, because that's the next argument we always, oh, you will devastate schools. Well, this paid the schools. It covered that completely so that the schools wouldn't be out any money. And the cities and the counties is another one that they always say is a problem there. And so mine was the very last amendment up on second reading on the budget bill. And so you can go to the timestamp of about 11:30 on, I believe, last Tuesday night, and you can hear that vote. And it's very eye-opening as to who's serious about trying to get some money back to people. This wouldn't require backfill or anything. I mean, it was money that we... So when that failed, I went in 2 days later on the third reading amendments, and I ran two more amendments. One at 100... I doubled it. I went to 160 million. Out of the 800 million, 310 or thereabouts was being put into the permanent... a couple of the long-term funds. And so I grabbed part of that money out of general fund and the other part out of each of those other two funds to make up the 160 million. So once again, it was not robbing from anyone other than maybe some out of savings. But when you're watching people lose their homes, I mean, we're still putting a bunch of money in savings and we're spending 800 million above what we did last time. And so they promptly defeated that. So
let me just stop you real quick.
Sure.
So, you know, the First Amendment was 7 mills. The Second Amendment was 14 mills. Do you have an idea of like what that would have meant to the average Wyoming citizen, you know, in dollars?
I did have all that written down and I gave that to on the floor. I think, and in my opinion, the 160 is still far too low, but for like a house of $240,000 value, I think it would have brought like $320.
Okay.
It was small.
Okay, so but still it's $300. It's $300.
Yeah, but it had been across the board for everyone. And so the third amendment, I cut it in half, the 80 million, and went for 40 million so that they couldn't... they couldn't say, well, it was too much money. You were breaking the bank. And at 40 million, the vote was still the same.
It was exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if you're listening and you haven't heard the episode, it's entitled Your Every Last Dime. And I played both the Second Amendment and the Third Amendment to the budget and played the vote. So you can hear how your representative voted on it. And it's pretty telling. The people, the very people that said we want immediate relief and we got to provide reform for Wyoming citizens, they're the people that voted against it.
Yeah, it was kind of heartbreaking to me because I look at that for the people. And in fact, in the first vote, I told the story about my neighbor. 82 years old, she went back to work waiting tables a couple of days a week because they've raised her rent. And
at 80 years old.
At 82. And listen, we ought not to be in that. I mean, I guess there's always a circumstance that we don't, but just because you want to raise taxes, no, we shouldn't be doing that to the people. And it's just completely out of control. And I'll be honest with you, I don't see any tax reform coming this time. Because I don't view 45 as tax reform.
Well, it's not.
No.
I mean, it's okay. So the author of the bill says that it's tax reform, but really, it's just moving the coconuts around.
Yeah.
I mean, moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. Really, that's all it is. Well, Mark, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. And as you know, you're welcome back here anytime you like. Just grab me. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, on the wyoleg.com, .gov, House District 30. And my number is 307-752-6819 is my personal number. My campaign phone, seems like we're always having some kind of trouble with that goofy thing. I guess we should buy a more expensive one, but being a conservative...
I get it.
So, yeah, they can call, they can email me, text me. I will tell you that we stay pretty busy, especially this time of year. So leave me a message, and I'll do my best to get back to you. And I always appreciate coming on, talking to your listeners. You got the best listeners around.
Thanks again, Mark.
That'll about do it for today's installment of the program. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to the show. You can do that from cowboystickpolitics.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. That way, you won't miss a single brand new episode of the program. For now, from the depths of the Middle Swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.